Sullivan, and you're listening to Swan Feather Radio, a podcast series about creatives, innovators, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders sharing their experiences in our cultural economy. For each episode, we pair two wonderful people for a conversation that we believe is important to share. We hear them discuss their work and creative process, what influences have guided their decisions, and those with whom they've shared their journey. Swan Feather Radio is presented in association with our friends at WeTransfer and Warner Music Group. Jessica Rivera is an accomplished A&R executive, music publishing operator, and a creative leader. Born and raised in the Bronx, she is a music fan, a champion of creative talent, and currently holds the role of Executive Vice President and Head of East Coast Operations for Universal Music Publishing Group. We recorded her at Berklee College of Music in Boston in front of a live studio audience.
Hi, my name is Dom Jones. I'm a junior at Berklee, dual majoring in songwriting and music business, and I'm from Oakland, California.
Hi guys, my name's Keegan Fitzpatrick. I'm from Maine, other side of the country. I'm a seventh semester, songwriting performance. I have one more year after this. That's me.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jessica Rivera. I am the EVP of Creative and Head of East Coast Operations for Universal Music Publishing. And I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me here. And I hope that we can all have a conversation because that's what this is. Let's get this rolling.
I think being at a music school, all of us have that music that we grew up listening to. And a lot of it is maybe inspired by where we grew up, how we grew up. I know you grew up in the Bronx, right? So can you tell us about how you came to music, maybe what artists you were listening to growing up?
Okay, so interesting enough, I've always been a music fan. I listened to everything from the 80s music because I grew up in the 80s. So I listened to like Cyndi Lauper. I listened to like Culture Club. I listened to Run DMC. I listened to LL Cool J. So I came up listening to everything. Being from the Bronx, I was a serious hip hop fan. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I'm going to say this for entertainment purposes. When I was 14 years old, I used to sneak into the clubs in the Bronx to see like KRS-One, you know, and all of these artists performing at the spots, and I'm obviously not supposed to be there. But I've always been a fan of music. I mean, my parents would play the music in the car, and I'm literally like, oh my God, my ears. And I would sit back there with my headphones and listen to everything that I wanted to listen to. So that's, for coming from the Bronx, I think that hip-hop has been my core, but I'm a music lover. Even to this day, I'll listen to everything. But yeah, hip-hop was my core.
So it was this love of music that brought you to your receptionist position. Yeah, and then you met Q-Tip. And we are just so curious about, like, what made you stick out? What qualities of your work ethic or your, I don't know, personal charisma, whatever it was, what made you stick out? What helped you kind of stick your foot in the door there?
I'm going to throw you a curveball. So when I got the job as a receptionist in a recording studio in New York. I just got home from college, and I was actually going to school for criminal justice. So my whole career path was somewhere else. Like, I wanted to be a homicide detective and then go into the federal agency. And I literally needed a job that paid more money. So my friend was like, hey, we're, you know, a friend of mine's leaving her job. I got the job there at the recording studio. That's what he was referring to. And while I was there, I got to meet a lot of artists. A&R people, managers, you know, all the people that will come in and out of studios. I got really close to Tribe Called Quest. Just during the time there, they were recording their album, Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Some of you may have seen that documentary, and that was hit very close to home because I was like, oh, I remember that. And so when when I was kind of hanging out in the studio and then just seeing how things were done and how the project, the music was being created, I got really close to them and everybody else who would come through. So one day we were in the lounge and Q-Tip said, "Hey, do you know somebody? I need an assistant. Do you know anybody who can do that?" I raised my hand. It was really simple. I didn't think about it. I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure." Mm. And he was like, "Okay, well, I can't pay you just yet because I have to figure it out." And I was like, "No problem." And he figured it out 2 weeks later, and for 2 years, I was his assistant.
So let's talk about something you just said stuck out to me. You said he asked about if you knew anyone, and you raised your hand. So how has that served you throughout your career, just saying yes when an opportunity comes up, even if maybe that wasn't what you planned for?
Literally, it's so simple. Yes, just raise your hand. And I mean that literally and figuratively. I went through a similar situation when I was at Bad Boy. I remember when I started at Bad Boy, I knew at that point that I wanted to segue into A&R. And I was in the A&R administration department, so I was dealing with a lot of budgets, looking at record deals, and dealing with coordinating studio sessions for albums and the artists or whatever. And so I realized I wanted to get closer to the music. So my boss at that time left the company, and Puffy, P. Diddy, whatever you want to call him right now, he literally said, "Okay, she's not going to be here. I need you to just... Yeah, I want you to take that position." And I did. And I said, "Wow, this is such a great opportunity." But then about 6 months later, he came back and said, "Okay, thank you. We found somebody. So I'm going to put you back where you were." And I was like, "Wait, no." So I said to him, I said, "I have an idea to how to divide the department. Can I present this idea to you?" And he's like, "Okay." So there was a Bad Boy weekend coming up, and everyone who worked at Bad Boy back then knew that in Atlanta, every other weekend, it was a Bad Boy weekend. So we all flew out to Atlanta. And while everybody else was out partying, I wrote out a proposal. I went downstairs to FedEx Kinko's and got it binded and made 3 copies. And by Monday, I was back at the office and gave a copy to Puff, gave a copy to Benny Medina, who was the president of the company at that time, and gave a copy to the general manager. And maybe about 5 days later, he came to me and he said, "Okay." And I created a role for myself as the director of production, which got me a little closer to the music.
Suggest that people connect that genuine attitude of their personality with their music. Where do you see that connect coming in? Is it in the way they perform? Is it in like just their music, or is it like a whole vibe? And if so, how do you suggest that?
It starts with the music. Okay. It absolutely starts with the music. You're telling a story. Through your music, you're telling me who you are. So the first, where it starts with you. You have to know who you are in order for me to get who you are. If you don't know who you are, I'm not gonna know who you are. It's that genuine connection. Songwriting, it's storytelling. You're telling a story, and you may be telling a story in experience, you may be just telling a story because you know somebody who's been through it, but through this personal, when you feel that connection and through this storytelling process, you are talking to someone who's been through it, someone who knows someone who's been through it. There's that genuine connection, but it has to start with you. It has to start with, do you know who you are? When I sign artists, I cannot sign an artist who doesn't know who they are. and who they are is telling by just having a conversation. Like, you can just have a conversation even on a day-to-day, and that person will tell you who they are without you asking them. And so I want to feel that when I'm listening to an artist and when I'm listening to a song, that's where that connection comes in. So it's really, the process is so genuine. And I can, you know, you can name so many artists that have that, that have been successful, because you know who they are. When you know who they are, everyone believes you, everybody wants to be a part of it. When you just have a great song, everybody's enjoying the song and they're moving on. It just is what it is.
Yeah. I want to know more about when it turned for you from just being a chain of jobs to like, okay, this is my career path. This is my genuine connection. This is where I want to be and I'm going to do it. Like, when did you have that kind of switch? Was it gradual or was it like you woke up one morning?
No, it was when I was staying out all night. When I was working in the studio at 9 a.m. to 5 and then going back to the studio to work with Q-Tip and Tribe from like 6 to 2 in the morning and then taking a taxi or a train back home to the Bronx and getting back up to do it all over again. And sometimes even watching the sun come up out of the studio. So it was literally just the grind. And I said, I'm not doing this for nothing. Like, I am losing sleep and I'm probably aging myself right now. Like, no. So that's when I realized that this is what that's when I realized that it was real, because I was putting so much into it. It was, the important part of it was to really be in the mix, to really be seen and to really be available to those conversations. And I think even when my parents said, hey, we're moving to Florida, are you coming? No. That right there, I had no choice. Mm-hmm. Like, make it happen. Yeah. You're out here by yourself in the Bronx.
Were there any times when you were in situations where you were in this grind and you found yourself like, I don't know, I like anything about what's going on right now, and like, I'm the only person in the room that doesn't know what's going on.
I do. Okay, so I was an A&R at Def Jam, and I remember I was working on a project that I inherited, and, you know, it's, while you still have to do your job, it's hard to inherit something that you're just like, oh, yeah, what am I supposed to do with this? And I remember we were in an A&R meeting, and every song I was playing, nobody liked. It got to the point where people started talking over the music. Yeah, that was bad. That was, when you talk about alligator skin, I think I cried for like 3 days after that, because I was just like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Like, do I have to go back there? Like, why? And really what it did, I developed alligator skin. It literally made me realize, like, girl, you are not bulletproof. Like, get it together. If you want to do this, take the nose. You're going to have to take the nose. You're going to have to take the, what were you thinking? You're going to have to take all of that that comes with this. You're going to have to take it. It's not going to be handed to you. And I kept that rolling in my mind. And that's what made me kind of pick myself up from my collar, because I literally did not want to show back up at that place. And I just kept going.
Swan Feather Radio is supported by WeTransfer. They help us with providing the easiest way to send large files to our creative community. WeTransfer uses its wallpaper background to support a diverse cross-section of talent, and you can learn more at WeTransfer.com.
Kanye was working on projects with me as a producer while I was at Def Jam, and I remember he mentioned to me, hey, I have music that I've been writing. I'm an artist. I have music I've been, you know, writing for myself. You want to hear it? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Because his tracks were crazy, so where would this go? And so when he came to my office the next day, and my office was like the size of a closet. And he shut the door, and he put on his CD. Oh, my gosh. Okay. He put on the CD, and then on comes Jesus Walks. And he started performing in my office. All that stuff that you see him doing on stage, he was doing that in this like closet-sized office. And he played the Mama song. And then I was like, what the hell? I said, wow, okay. I was like, all right, I want to do this. So I got the blessing from Damon Dash and Jay-Z to do the deal directly with Def Jam. And then I brought it to the president of Def Jam at the time. And Kanye and I sat with him and had a meeting. And he said to Kanye, if you had an artist and you were writing and producing for your artist, I will sign your artist. And I'm literally like, did I just hear that right? Oh, yeah, I think I did. And he played the same songs, Jesus Walks, everything. And so 2 weeks begged to do it. Still no, 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 no. And then we ended up, Def Jam ended up getting it anyway through Rockefeller. But then 5 months later, he brought me John Legend. And John Legend I was going to do. And everybody's like, all right, cool. Let's put an offer out. Great. And then it came back like, hey, so we need X amount of money more to close the deal. Nope, you can't have it. Okay, no problem. No, it's the problem. Okay, no, I want this. Nope, can't have it. Okay, no problem. Fine. Mentally checked out. But a couple of months later, comes back, and I'm in a meeting, and they said, hey, who is this John Legend? And I'm like, yeah, that's Kanye's artist. I sent you the music like 5 months ago. Well, what's going on? Why don't we have that deal? Oh, because I couldn't get enough money to close it. Who didn't give it to you? That person. Okay, great. Can we close it now for X amount of money? No, you're going to have to give him a label deal. And then I think about 2 weeks later, I resigned and went to EMI Publishing. That scenario could have gone any way. Like, I could have gotten bitter. Oh, my career would have been somewhere else if you would have let me do this. They're like the biggest artists in the world right now. All right. But then I realized when I walked away that it was something that spoke to my confidence. Maybe it wasn't meant to happen. It was meant to happen for the reason of, hey, listen to your gut. Trust your gut. You got this. And the purpose of it was for my confidence. And I walked away feeling confident. I took the silver lining of that cloud and felt confident. And that's what allowed me to say, hey, so there's this girl from Barbados. She hasn't closed her record deal yet. She didn't write the song, but I want to sign her. Can we do it? Sure. Okay, thanks. And I wasn't going to walk away from that. And that's what I learned from that. And I think I know that I carry that experience in a positive way with me moving forward. And I have to say it was a blessing that it happened, because I honestly don't think that I would be where I am right now if that didn't happen. So that's why I say most importantly that the no's are so important, because it does build your character. And it's not it's all about how you look at it, of course. It's the perception of it. But it builds your character. It literally, literally makes you look in that mirror and say, okay, you, do you have this or you don't? And of course, you don't want to tell yourself, no, you don't got this. Who wants to say that to themselves? No, you do have this. Not at this moment, though. Timing is everything, and that's the patient part that's important. Everything happens in its time. A lot of these artists, a lot of these songwriters have been going at it for years. Even though to some of you guys, and maybe even to some of us, as soon as we recognize it, we think it just happened. Like, wow, you know, this is great. This is such a great opportunity for you. But they have been going at it for years, evolving, developing, you know, whatever it is. They found themselves. I mean, are you guys familiar with Daniel Caesar? Are you familiar with that artist? Daniel Caesar has been doing this for a minute. And I remember hearing music that was way different than what I'm hearing right now. But guess what? His time is now. People are listening to him now. People are engaged now. It's all about the timing, but with that comes patience. And that, not only just as an executive, but as a creator. you just have to have that patience and just be able to tell yourself, you're doing this and you can do this. You know, it's kind of like somebody told me recently, like, do a superhero pose in the mirror and it makes you feel so good. Mm-hmm. So whether it's just like stretching your arms out and just like whatever it is, like do that because it does something to the mental. But it literally, like, you shouldn't, none of this should, how would you say, discourage you. Nothing should discourage you, no matter what you experience leaving, graduating, and going out into the real world. None of this should discourage you, because you know what it is? It's called the process. That's it. It's a process. That's it. And just go along with it, and just take those, I would say, take those nuggets, like those golden nuggets with you, because I think that's what it is. I don't believe in negative. I believe in experiences, and just keep it moving.
I'm currently in seventh semester. I'm studying pro music at Berkeley. I'm focused on music psychology. And I have a question. So as an artist, how can we connect with the label from our perspective? Because, you know, most of time, the labels do not, like, they are looking for us, but we, how can we involve to this process?
It's interesting because the labels do look like, I remember back when people will go, the artists will go around like, hey, listen to my demo, you know, and by the way, your question back then would be, how do I get my music heard without me having to walk into every single building? So we're kind of on the other side of that, where you can just put your music out, whatever platform you choose to, and the labels are gonna find you. And it really is, I mean, obviously relationships. So getting out there and networking and letting people know who you are and what you do can bring those ears to your work. But if you're just, you know, putting your music out, then obviously the label's gonna find you. But I think that the best, if you're saying how can we engage with them, go to events where there are going to be label people. You know, let them know who you are. It's that networking part of it. Let them know who you are. Let them know what you do. And you know, I hate to say this, but if they see you enough times, it's literally like, okay, like, who are you? You know what I'm saying? And that's part of the networking aspect of all of this, because relationships are important. But you know, it's honestly, I would say that's the way to engage the labels. And then obviously, you know, through management, through a respectable manager and an attorney, those are other ways to engage the labels outside of just waiting, you know, waiting for them to find you. Those are other ways. But you know what? I feel like because we are in such a we're in such a landscape that you're able to create and do your thing and be discovered, I think that that's the fun part. You know, I think that that's the fun part, because you, when the label does find you, they're bringing you in because they get you. And you definitely want someone who understands who you are and is going to support your creativity in the way that you want to put it out there. So this, to me, is probably the best part of it. And the most exciting part of it. And it's a lot of hard work, you know, but, you know, they say, you know, nothing comes easy when it's worth it, you know? So.
I'm Sinjin. I'm from Ithaca, New York, and I'm studying music business management here and have ambitions of becoming one of the young A&Rs that you were just talking about. And I'm wondering, what are some pro tips that you have for when we get in the room and, you know, making our bosses listen to us about the people that we really feel passionate about?
Okay, so I was talking to Tanya about this earlier. I literally had 2.2 seconds to get to my point with Puff before it. And so in that 2.2 seconds, if he lifted his head, I knew I had him. Then I would get into the details. So I would say to you is get to the point real quick and then go into the details when you get in that room. When you're striving, I don't like to say try because that's an invitation to failure because we all want to succeed here, so I'm going to say strive. When you're striving to convince your boss that you are, this is something you want to do, that passion, it's having that passion. And that passion can come in all different forms. I signed a writer that I paid a lot of money for, but who wasn't worth that on paper at the moment. But I literally sat in a meeting on a video conference with LA, with the chairman at the time, and all of the senior executives at the table. And I said, I want to do this deal. And if it doesn't work out, I will put my head on this table and y'all can you could chop it off. I'm good, you can fire me. And with that, I mean, he was like, okay, you're taking it to the extreme. But they said yes. So for me, I'm not saying always like put your job on the line because you got to pick and choose your battles. You can't be happy about everything. You know, you can't be that excited about everything, you know. But for that, it literally was that moment where I said, you know what? This is my genuine passion about it. I want to do this. Give me the opportunity because you know what? I'm okay if I fail. And I know what those consequences are. So it's that passion that you have. You bring that into the room. And that's always going to sell it. And I say that to the staff that I work with. It literally is, tell me what your strategy is. Tell me why you want to do this. And please do not tell me because he or she is a hot writer. Like, what is your vision? When you have your vision, when you have your strategy, that sells it. All the time, because I know that at the end of the day, you're going to roll up your sleeves, and whether that project succeeds or it fails, because it can go either way, you're willing to always roll up your sleeves because you believe in it that much to make it work. So that's what sells it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Hi. Hi. My name is Hien. I'm from Budapest, Hungary, and I study electronic production design and professional music here. Mm-hmm. And my question is, what are the platforms that you usually discover new music? I'm sure that you get like a lot of like mm-hmm. music everywhere, but when you look for something specifically mm-hmm. that you just want to listen to because you like it, where do you go or how do you do that?
You know what? Honestly, I go to a lot of different places. I kind of, like, when I'm in the space of discovery, I'm not consciously in it, if that makes sense. I literally would just, like, I remember, like, I'll turn on Beats 1, and I'll just let it play. And if something catches me, I'm like, oh, what is that? Spotify, there are various playlists on there that I'll jump back and forth on. As far as SoundCloud, to be honest with you, I'm not sitting on SoundCloud because I don't have the hours in my day to do that. But if someone is mentioned something to me about something, yeah. I'm looking. Uh-huh. But I honestly keep my ears open to, like I said, I'll turn on Apple Music, Beats One, or I'll be on Spotify and I just let it roll. And if something catches me, and you know, one of the things for me, to be honest with you, if I'm preoccupied and I'm literally listening to music and it just like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, wait, what was that? I'm on it because I wasn't paying attention and something just went like this. I say, oh yeah, I need to find out what this is. So.
And do you pay attention to what music blogs put out?
I do. So with the blogs, like it's interesting because obviously you get a lot of, you know, new artists coming off of the blogs. And yes, you do, like I will check them out. And again, it's like I'll know when I'll listen to the song, but kind of really a little bit into the song, I know where I am with it. You know, if I'm like ready to like, oh wow, this is going somewhere, I love this, or yeah, this is not for me. I know where I am with it mm-hmm. in a short period of time. But I love listening to whole songs because you never know where it's gonna go. Yeah. It may start off somewhere and then all of a sudden, like 2 minutes in, you're like, whoa, what is this? Wow. And then, you know, then it just turns into something else. And now you're looking up that artist and you're like, okay, what else does this person have? So, you know, and sometimes it takes more than one song. You know, there was somebody who presented an artist last year to me, and it was a video. And I was like, I like this, I wanna hear more music. And, you know, I didn't get the music right away, and I got the music last week from last year. And when I heard this person's project, I said, I get it. It just put all of it, it put it in context. And sometimes you do need that. And me, because I am a music lover and I want to feel it, when I hear more, it will then put it in context for me.
Jessica, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom with us. I'm really enjoying hearing your perceptions of the industry.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I'm Ani Johnson from Music Business here at Berkeley. One of the things that I want to hear from you is how useful or helpful is it to you when you sign an artist that they have some understanding of the business? And second part, what can we be teaching so that they're more prepared and can work as a partner with you?
That's a great question. I always feel like everybody should know their business because it is their business. You know, it's one thing to have the people around you that you trust to handle it, but it still is yours. So you should be aware of what is happening with your business. I think the focus on teaching them is, I really feel like what you're doing right now is the different types of deals. How does that work? What is the upside for them, but also what is the downside? Because I believe that understanding both scenarios allows you to make the best educated decision on how you want to move forward. Because you may go to a major label and then they'll hit you with okay, let's do a 360 deal and I own everything. And you realize, you know what? I don't need this right now. I can do an independent deal, own my masters, license my record, do whatever, and have that freedom. And then if I want to upstream, I'll do that. Because I need those resources. When I say upstream, so if you go from an independent label to a major label, that's the easiest way to explain it. That would be to upstream into a major label system. And the advantage of doing that, obviously, is because of the global reach that a major label have that perhaps maybe an independent wouldn't have. The independence could be within the major labels, or they can be independent rather, you know, on their own. And, you know, your deal is up with them or it's a non-exclusive kind of situation and you move over to a label deal because that happens. You build up that momentum. People are watching you. So, you know, I feel like these are the things that you need to know and this is the education that you need to receive walking into it because you should be able to make that kind of decision on what you want to do moving forward and what's going to be the best case scenario for you as you build your career and build that momentum. Maybe you don't want to give it all up right away and you want to keep something and continue on a grassroots trajectory and, you know, and then build from there because you also want to build your story. You want to walk into a situation with your movie. You want someone who's going to take you, say, I get you. I support what you do because that's your truth. You always want to speak your truth and you want people on your side that hear your truth, understand your truth, and support your truth. So I think to go back to your question and answer that is literally like what you're teaching them now is giving them, again, the information to make that educated decision on what they want to do with their livelihood.
Clicks and views and aesthetic matter when you're looking at an artist, or do they? I think that's a perception among like new artists that I need to have a million views on YouTube and 1,000 or more listens on SoundCloud. My cover needs to be perfect in a field with like flowers and stuff.
I think in that sense, I'm such a classic A&R because it don't have to have that many views. If it's amazing, it's amazing. And I feel like, hey, maybe nobody noticed it yet. What does it matter? But there are some people who do look at that. And, you know, by all means, if it's the business and that's what it is, rock on. I don't. I am a fan of getting on things early. I mean, I'm a fan of being a fan of the music and saying, oh yeah, you have something. I want to do business with you. Like the feeling that I get from being involved with someone from stage like one and watching it grow and being a part of that process of it growing, and then, you know, hearing it on the radio or, you know, just watching that person just grow up, so to speak, in front of you, that's exciting to me. Or meeting someone and saying, oh my goodness, she is a star. And, you know, and then you start to see what's happening and you're like, yeah, that kind of felt like it when I met her back when. So for me, that excites me because a lot of the deals that I've done that have gotten me to this point have been very early. And I pride myself on that because I do want to be creative and I do want to trust my gut and I do want to be a part of creating a market. And then there's research. Then there are people who are research driven. And, you know, again, the real A&Rs are, you know, in that perspective, the real A&Rs are the people that are clicking and listening and clicking again and listening and clicking again. Those are the A&Rs in this process. And so while that's great because you kind of go in with the mentality of, oh, they kind of have a built-in audience, then you kind of get into the part of, okay, but how deep does this go? How far can this go? So, you know, that to me, those are the different types of A&R. You know, you have your A&R that does A&R. And I mean, A&R is A&R right now, so I'm not discrediting anybody who's going to do research and find their way through that, because a lot of good artists are found through research as well. But, you know, that's their springboard. You know, oh, those numbers, let me see. Okay, then I'm going to get into it, you know. And then there's the classic A&R where you find somebody, they're performing somewhere, they have an amazing voice, but they only have 700,000 views. And that's been since 2016. That number won't say anything to anybody. But anyone who's looking for a talent, the talent is saying, oh, wow, I want to be a part of that. But, yeah, no, I'm a fan at the heart, and I allow my heart to guide me to what it is that I want to do, because at the end of the day, guess what? I'm the one that's standing in the front saying, hey, this is why you should love this too. And people have to believe me. If I'm selling a used car and it has 250,000 miles on it and I'm telling you it'll get you from New York City to Buffalo, I'm lying. I'm just trying to sell you the car. That's going to break down somewhere in Ithaca. So, you know, but I'm not interested in being that used car salesman. I want to be passionate about what it is that I believe in. So with that helps to push it along, because you want... This is the part of the story where you get to pick your family. You're born into your family, but this is the part that you get to pick your family. You get to pick the people around you that believe in you. And so I want to genuinely be that person who believes in you, or else I'm doing you a disservice and I'm doing myself a disservice, because this is not doing anything for any of us. So I can't fake it till I make it. If you... We're number one, number two, number five on the Hot 100, and the rest of your music sounds like you had a great day just that one time, I can't get down with it, because how am I going to sell you to somebody when I don't believe in it?
Well, I want to thank both of you guys for being here today. Jessica Rivera from Universal. Come on, y'all, clap. And Michelle from Swan Feather. I mean, if y'all dig podcasts, check out Swan Feather. It's popping.
I'm Michelle Sullivan, and you're listening to Swan Feather Radio.